listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician. Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 168 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me today for our discussion is the one and only Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I was just realizing now that as we're going to embark on a discussion about music videos and tied in somewhat with my last music video, I'm having my publicist currently try and find a place to premiere my new video.
Oh, there's a new video. I did not know
about
this.
There's a new one. You might have actually seen it, though, since I did share it with Pledge Music people. It's like, it's just a single camera shot of us recording one of the songs.
Okay, I think I saw that.
As it went down in the studio.
Well, that's cool. Yeah,
that's on my mind.
You got some great press. You got featured in No Depression, which is a very big and reputable music blog.
Yeah, I told my mom that, and she said, what the hell's that? I've never heard of that. I'm like, well, if you liked Americana music, it's kind of like the Rolling Stone of Americana. Yeah. And she's like, all right, cool, congrats.
Mom, I promise, this is big. I'm fresh off of being at the ASCAP Expo, where we had some CD Baby sessions and got to meet a lot of cool artists and hang out, and we had three different sessions, and it was a good time. So today we're going to be talking about six tips for making a no-budget music video. After that, we're going to be getting into some listener feedback, lots of comments in emails and a voicemail. But before that, Chris, we have some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Just a couple items, but they might have big implications. Well, the music industry rumor mill went crazy when popular music business news site Digital Music News reported that an unidentified source at Apple said the iTunes store would be closed within 2 years, which would basically kill much of the music download market. Many in the industry accused Digital Music News of poor journalism, and in a rare move, Apple weighed in and addressed the report, saying the rumors were completely false. However, Digital Music News followed up after all the controversy, saying that their inside sources were still holding firm to those statements. Whether or not the rumors are true, it's easy to see that Apple continues to put all of its eggs in the Apple Music basket. And more Apple Music news. Apple recently announced plans to give the Apple Music service a major overhaul that should address many user issues and complaints and provide an overall better user experience. The official upgrade announcement is said to be forthcoming at the WWDC conference in June, with the new and improved Apple Music being made available sometime after that. Considering the size of Apple's bank account, Apple Music has yet to receive the marketing blitz that would normally accompany a product launch from Apple, but that is all about to change. Not only a big upgrade coming to Apple Music, but a big advertising spend as well. So clearly Apple is definitely in the streaming market, and whether or not the rumors are true, it seems to make sense that eventually they're going to have to deal with the product confusion.
Well, the first story was a big confusing shock to me, because I thought they killed iTunes last year. I mean, you and I have not purchased a download in...
Well, the thing that's
longer than that,
but that's funny about the rumors and Apple getting so upset. If you follow music press, there's been several articles in the past month about the mess that has been created between iTunes, between iCloud, between Apple Music, and all those three things. iTunes Match, a fourth thing, not all working together. And my biggest complaint, and some of the articles that were out there were basically saying the same thing, is you buy something and it won't put it on your phone. Like, you buy a download and it constantly deletes it from your phone, throws it in the cloud. Sometimes it deletes your current catalog, like MP3s that I've had in my collection that are not things I purchased from iTunes, But I may have gotten, like, maybe from an artist directly, like a Bandcamp type thing or a CD Baby or something else, or I ripped the CD. That's probably the best case. And you put it in your collection in iTunes, and now all those tracks get converted, down converted to MP3 or removed because it can't find it in the store. It deletes it. So it's a big mess. And so it's made me hate handling MP3s because I get so frustrated. I was on a plane the other day, and an MP3 that I have of this Radiohead live concert that I did not get buy from the Apple Music Store, it's on my phone. I can see it, but it's grayed out and won't let me play it. But when I go to my home computer, it plays just fine. All those kind of things just have made this nightmare of a mess that clearly something's going to have to give, which does not surprise me that they've probably decided at some point we're going to shut down this download store.
I mean, I occasionally will open up my iTunes player, but if I can avoid it, I do. Because, I mean, it's too much to manage, and then all the confusion around that stuff.
Yeah,
it's frustrating.
The bummer is that I think for special releases and all those things that some of the feedback and the backlash towards Apple Music was people saying that if Apple Music doesn't acknowledge your music exists, then it doesn't exist. And basically saying, like, all these B-sides, all these special, like, fan releases and things get messed up, or the system doesn't know what they are, and so it, or
even scarier for me, or for some of the people that have written these articles recently, is you have probably a bunch of your own music on there that you recorded that might be demos or whatever, and, like, you know, you're storing it as a WAV file in your iTunes library, and then suddenly it's inaccessible to you, and you're like, damn it, that's my own music.
Yep. So it's, yeah, exactly. I've had that happen too. So it's created a real mess, especially, like, yeah, the last album that I did, all the files, like, in iTunes, I could not access them. It kept removing them. It kept moving them. It was weird. So it does not surprise me. For the artist, it's a bummer because, you know, downloads generate more revenue potentially. As an artist, it's hard for me to want to fight for something that's such a terrible user experience at this point. If my fans experience as much frustration around using the service as I experience around using the service, then chances are they're not listening to my music. And I'd rather it be easy for them to listen.
Yeah, I mean, in just putting out my newest record, you know, I kind of noticed that about how I'm communicating as well, because 5 years ago I would have said, you know, please, by all means, go to iTunes. And now I'm sort of like, you know, please buy it on CD Baby. And if not that, just get it on Spotify or Apple Music, because I don't want you to have to deal with downloading this stuff. And, you know,
yeah,
I hate downloads now.
Yeah. Yeah. It just becomes a managing nightmare because the devices themselves, it's different if you're an Android user, I believe, but the device itself doesn't let you handle MP3. So it just becomes this file format that is so complicated to use when it was supposed to be so easy. That's what's so weird about it. Regardless of what we think, we have to embrace that we're moving into a full streaming world. And I don't think the MP3 is going to go away. It still serves a purpose. But unless Apple can figure out a better way to differentiate the two places so there's less product confusion, less user confusion, and maybe this rollout of a new upgraded Apple Music in June or whenever it comes out, it'll probably, if it's not right after that conference, it'll be probably this summer. If that solves a lot of the issues and bugs, then great. Maybe there's better integration between the two, where from Apple Music you can buy it or download it, but who knows? So it's a lot of work to do still there. I'm curious, you know, Pandora's planning on launching a streaming service. I'm curious to see how theirs compares to Spotify and Apple. I know they purchased Ardio, which was a streaming service, and that is going to be the foundation they build theirs off of. And I know that someone here at CD Baby was a huge fan of Ardio, loved Ardio. And so that will provide a better user experience. But yeah, lots of streaming services coming out this year. Lots of rumors about Amazon, about iHeartRadio, and SoundCloud just launched one. In 2017, I can't imagine Apple having big plans to keep the iTunes store open for another 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, you know, this just reminded me of another potential news item, but Amazon's kind of competitor to YouTube.
Yes.
What are they calling that? The shoot, I'm forgetting what it's called.
I should have used that in the news items.
But yeah, basically it's like, you know, if you're a video creator, you can now upload your content to Amazon and it's accessible to Prime subscribers. And then you can monetize those videos based on 3 or 4 different criteria that you can kind of pick and choose between. But that's, I mean, that's obviously not a music streaming direct relation to our news we covered, but
yeah,
an interesting development.
Yes, yes. We'll see if it gets any traction. A lot of people talk about, hey, it's the YouTube killer. And it's like, YouTube, it's like, that's like saying that it's become more like the cable channels of the internet. And it's like, you gotta come with something really big that's going to kill YouTube and really that people want to use and works better and somehow has an advantage. Because at this point, I don't know that there's an advantage.
Sure. I mean, and also YouTube being free to pretty much everyone is the hardest hurdle to overcome.
Yeah. And I saw a lot of people saying artists should abandon YouTube and go there to, you know, protest their low payouts. Well, Amazon's not paying anything at this point. So why go to another platform where you're going to get zero? So yeah, interesting stuff happening. It'll be, I think, an interesting summer and early fall with seeing how this shakes out. You know, the one thing that I am curious to hear from the artist community, it's like, how are you planning your album releases or your music release, I should say, as we start moving into a streaming world? Is it changing what you're doing? Are you planning things differently? What are your thoughts on that? You can call us at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or just leave a comment in the show notes section of the website at cdbabypodcast.com. It's definitely change is in the air. I'm feeling optimistic, though. I'm feeling optimistic.
I was just thinking that, you know, this, of course, would be an impossible interview for you to get, but Thom Yorke, I am so curious what's going on in that guy's head right now.
I'll email him today.
Yeah,
I'm
just
sure
see,
I'll get him
right. If you can get him on. But not even because of their new release necessarily or their music or anything, but he has been on record saying he thought Spotify was what the final fart of a dying corpse of an industry or something. And Radiohead has been famously kind of at odds with YouTube. And then when they put this new record out, the two singles from the album are on Spotify, not the whole album. But it's available as a full album on Apple Music and other streaming places. And then
Apple Music and Tidal.
Yeah. And they put their videos up on YouTube. So
yeah, they premiered the song on YouTube with
yeah.
A
so I'm
video.
Like, what happened? What's changing? Like, what? Why the? I don't know if it's necessarily a reversal of their stance, but they're at least embracing aspects of those services that they had challenged for so long.
Well, you can call us, like I mentioned, or email us with any of your thoughts on all that. So, Chris, let's move out of the news and get to the subject at hand, the main event, the headliner for this episode of the podcast.
What you've all been waiting for.
So we're talking about 6 tips for making a no-budget music video. And a lot of this was knowledge you gleaned from making your video that is very cool and has done decently or well, I assume. If it hasn't gotten a lot of views, it's gotten a lot of notoriety.
Mom, I swear, no depression is like really cool.
That's right. But it's a very cool video that, you know, looking at it, it seems like there was probably a sizable budget and you did some really innovative things that I think a lot of artists would think, I don't have the ability to do that with my minimal budget, but you did. And so I think that the tips you have that I'm looking at these 6 tips, I think they're all great and sort of outline how you accomplished that video. But why don't you lead us into the discussion?
Yeah, so I got the idea to come up with these tips after making this video, which, you know, when you finish an album and you spent however much money recording and mastering and manufacturing the thing, and then you got to spend money to, you know, register your copyright and distribute it. There's hardly ever do musicians have a bunch of extra money left for a music video budget. But then at the same time, a music video is pretty much, you know, kind of prerequisite to promote your music. So that was a conundrum. So it was sort of like, well, how do I come up with an idea that I feel like will be cool but costs like literally $0? So these were the tips that I came up with that goal in mind, kind of in hindsight after I'd pulled off actually producing the video. But and I just had one disclaimer, which is a lot of these tips are kind of centered around working with other people. So if you are someone who has the time or, you know, technical know-how to totally make your own video, then some of these might not apply because you can spend as much time as you like. But the first, you know, important thing for me to do is to get friends involved because, well, for my idea, I basically needed someone else to do the camera work. But there's a lot of different ways you can get people involved, you know, to shoot it, to be extras, to be help you out with gathering props or whatever. And then I think almost most importantly is that when you get other people involved, you have that kind of fire under your ass to actually, you know, execute this thing and to do it well, because you don't, you don't want to get all your friends on board for something that turns out to be a bummer. So,
no, you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so basically in my scenario, I asked my friend Craig, who is a filmmaker, to help me out. So I'm lucky in that regard. He had, you know, he knows how to use a camera. He had lights. He had a bunch of different cameras. He had kind of all the basic things that you would want for a shoot. But, that being said, I have also seen plenty of really captivating music videos where you can tell it was just shot on someone's iPhone. So, you know, it's definitely not necessary to have a filmmaker involved. And then if you want multiple camera angles or multiple shots of a particular performance or something, just ask more of your friends to be involved. And the more people that are there, the more camera angles you have and the more stuff you have to edit together afterwards. I also mentioned friends are good for extras. You know, I had two of my friends show up to be these kind of sort of distant Twilight Zone-y.
The eerie people in your video.
Yes, the eerie people at the end of my video.
Creeps me out.
So, yeah, they were, my friends Doug and Anna came and hung out for a while, and they didn't have too much to do. They just had to put on some clothes and stand there eerily. I have a friend, Putnam Smith, who did a video maybe 4 or 5 years ago for one of his songs where at the end he wanted to have like a crowd... sort of a parade walking through a park, and everyone would be holding up a cast iron pan. So he basically put a call out on social media to, you know, any of my fans or friends or family that has a cast iron pan, show up at such and such a place.
How did that work in context of the song?
Well, the song was called Cast Iron Pan.
Okay. Of course it was.
Yeah. So it all worked out that way.
So tip one, get your friends involved.
Get your friends involved. Tip two is plan to work quickly, because when you're relying on your friends or family to help you for free or for cheap, you really need to be respectful of their time. You know, like, this is your baby. So they're, you know, probably happy to help you out as long as it feels like a party. But you know, the minute you wrap up one day and you're like, hey, can you come back tomorrow? Then suddenly it's a job for them. So my recommendation is to make sure your video concept can be shot in about 4 to 6 hours over the course of one day. And, you know, if you can, I would include setup and breakdown time in that chunk of time so you're not bumming people out, you know, and get beer and pizza if that's what's needed to make it seem like a party. But don't ask too much of them.
Yeah, that's one thing. It's when you're using friends and free labor, exactly what you're saying. If it's not fun and they start sitting around, it becomes a job and then they're going to leave. Then now, instead of getting stuff done, you're having to manage them and keep them happy. And suddenly it's like this role reversal where you're trying to use their help so you can sort of be the star and accomplish this thing. Now you're kind of like, hey, everybody, you know, you're kind of like having to make them happy just so they don't leave. And I've been in situations where that's the case. You can tell quickly when people have lost interest and they're ready to go, and suddenly you don't have their focus or attention anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you have enough stuff to worry about if you're going to be in this thing, and you don't want to have to feel like you're hosting a party as you know, as well as being at one. And I actually kind of made a mistake of calling Doug and Anna sort of too soon to the set. So they ended up actually waiting around for about an hour and a half before we needed them. But they brought snacks. They were fine. They were just, you know, having fun. We shot it at a YWCA Olympic-sized pool. So they had plenty of stuff to occupy themselves with in the meantime. But I would say that, too. If you can kind of script out your day and call people as needed instead of having them be there for the entire time. Speaking of the YWCA, that's my next point is to shoot in one location and make it count.
So point three, shoot in one location and make it count.
Make it count. Because, like I said, you have enough stuff to worry about. You don't want to have multiple sets, and then suddenly you're driving from one place to another and having to coordinate, does everyone have directions? So if you're going to shoot in one location, to make things simple, it has to be really interesting. So I would say find an interesting place, and sometimes they're in your backyard. I think we oftentimes think that, you know, what we're familiar with isn't all that exotic. But that's not true. Like, I think down the street from me, there's a crazy, crazy junkyard that, as I've driven by it a few times, I'm like, that would make an awesome spot for video. So anyways, be on the lookout for places that are really near to you. And then another part about choosing a location is to not be afraid to ask for access to places that might seem, you know, out of your reach, whether it be, you know, in a museum after hours or at some sort of monument or, you know, anything like that. I think a lot of times directors of those places or groundskeepers are, you know, or they can be excited to help out an artist that's, somehow going to showcase their space.
So in your video, did you have to pay for the pool? How did that all come about? Who did you ask? How did it happen?
So I know a woman who is the director of the YWCA here in Maine, where I live. And I had been bringing my daughter to swim lessons there and kind of got to know her. And she likes my music. So one day I just said, hey, could I shoot a music video here? And she said, yeah, that'd be awesome. The only catch was that we would need a lifeguard, because I basically told her my video involved me falling into a pool like 100 times. So that was going to be an expense that I knew was out there, and I was willing to, you know, cover that, because I didn't think that would be more than, you know, $50 to $100 or something like that over the course of a few hours. But she was happy to cover that, and I think it was sort of like a mutual publicity thing. She knew I would be, showing off her facility in the video. And then the other thing is I am giving 25% of the download proceeds of the song to the Y. So that was a little...
Well, that's cool.
Another, you know, motivation for them to let me use the place for free.
As your fame increases, people are going to make pilgrimages to that pool so they can fall backwards into that pool.
And then
just like Chris did, I want to fall into the pool where Chris did and then get a video of it and then reverse it so I can come out backwards like he did.
Yeah. And they just have to learn my songs backwards.
Yeah.
Which, we haven't even really explained this to anyone, but previous, you know, frequent listeners will have heard the gimmick, but basically I memorize my song in reverse. I fall into the pool at some point while I'm lip syncing in reverse, so that when all that footage is then flipped around, I'm defying gravity, coming up out of the pool and singing in what appears to be forward lip syncing to the song.
Yes, and you did a whole how-to video, so people should check that out. The location, I think, is one thing that people probably overcomplicate. I think a lot of people tend to not look closely at a location. They kind of look at a grand scale and not realizing that the camera doesn't show all that much. You can really notice this if you've ever seen like a Hollywood film or TV show that's filmed in some place you know, like your hometown or something, where you realize they hardly show anything. It's just like it might even be just 6 feet of a wall, and that the camera doesn't show anything else. So you really have to kind of think of things at a more micro level and not just look at, hey, there's this giant thing over here, it'd be cool. And it's like, well, you don't necessarily need a cityscape or a whole slew of skyscrapers. There's some cool things you can do if you just kind of envision things more close up.
Yeah, and that actually reminded me of something I didn't list for our discussion today. But basically, when you're thinking about a single location, you have to think about that location across a time span of 4 to 6 hours or however long you're allotting to shoot this, because that location can change, whether it's lighting or weather. And in our case...
Or people and cars.
People and cars, right. So in our case, it worked to our advantage because we had kind of scripted it out to be in three acts in a way, which were, you know, very loosely defined acts. It was basically a change of clothing and a change of lighting. So, and the lighting was taken care of, we already knew in advance, because we started shooting in the afternoon when it was daylight. The second act was a few hours later, as, you know, it's getting to be dark. And then by the third act, it's completely dark out. And so whatever natural light was coming in through those windows, we knew it was going to affect the shoot. And so we kind of had to shoot it with that in mind. So yeah, keep that.
The one thing I have for this, number three, the shoot in one location and make it count, depending on the location you choose and depending on how many people you bring along with you and how official it looks, you might get somebody hassling you for a permit. If you're inside like a building like the YMCA, like you were, that should never really be a problem. But if you're out in public space and have what looks like a pretty professional film crew, even if it is just your friends, you might get hassled for having a filming permit.
That is true. Yeah. So be legal about it.
Or just be extra quick.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, what's funny that here in Portland, we have, it used to be the sign that's been around forever. It used to say made in Portland. Now it says Portland, Oregon. If you search anything like Portland city photos, that'll probably be the one thing that pops up first. It sits on top of a building. It's very accessible to get on film. And somebody I knew was out there filming and got stopped and got harassed for not having a permit to film that sign.
Oh, is it trademarked?
I guess so. It's like you have to get permission to use it in a film.
Wow.
Might have been for something we were doing here at CD Baby. I can't remember who it was, but I remember them going, we can't use that sign.
Huh. Interesting. All right, so don't shoot anything that's going to get you sued.
Or just be quick about it.
Let's see. My next...
number four. What's number four?
Number four, come up with a visual hook. So in my case, it's what I've already described, the repetition of me rising up out of a pool while singing the song, which is, you know, sort of... it's supposed to be strange and impossible looking. So that was my hook. And the reason I think it's important to come up with something like that, you know, maybe not as difficult to do as that, but it's because you're not going to have a big special effects budget. You're not going to have probably, you know, a super interesting variety of sets or anything like that. So you need to have one hook that can kind of carry the whole video and either be repeated or be done throughout the course of the video where people still don't really lose interest. It can't get that dull either. So, you know, whether it's a funny dance or you know, a costume or something, or I thought of that Gautier song where throughout the course of the video, it's sort of a stop motion version of him getting his face painted.
Yeah.
Something like that, you know, which is, it looks very cool, but actually probably all it took was time. You know, it doesn't really take a big budget to do that. So, yeah. And I would say make sure you have this hook very very much agreed upon, and you know what you're trying to achieve, because if you just show up on the day of the shoot and you're sort of uncertain about what you're going to get, the whole day could be a waste, and you know you and your friends will be fumbling around trying to grasp at straws to make something look cool. So visual hook.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned Gautier, because while you were talking about a visual hook, I thought of Walk Off the Earth, who did that song with five people around a guitar. And for a music video, that was a visual hook. It was also, you know, the execution of it was interesting, but that's still a visual hook. Like, if you heard that recording, you wouldn't think anything of it, their version of that song. But in video, that translates differently and becomes a cool visual thing. Hey, there's five people using one guitar to play this song. And same thing with what they did with their version of Adele's Hello, where they're swinging these, I don't even know what they're called. They're like these tubes that make tones, and they're using that for the music. And it's very visually interesting the way they're executing it. So there's that kind of visual hook. There's a visual hook of like what you did with coming up out of the water, and like, this is what is going to be interesting about this video. But yeah, you should definitely think about that ahead of time, plan it out, do some research, look at a couple locations and see what could be interesting about this, and you know, try some new stuff.
Yeah. And that brings up another good point. I think, and you said research, there's billions of hours of footage on YouTube at this point. So it very well could be that an idea you have has already been done. So I think it's, you know, kind of important to just have your eyes open to what people are doing in videos. And, you know, if you have a certain technique that you think is unique, just Google it and see, because, you know, maybe a band the next town over has already done that. And then, not to say it's not still worth doing, but then, you know, you have to kind of put your own stamp on it in some way.
Yeah. And some of the things that you can draw on for a visual hook could be a lyric in your music. That's a good place to start to try and get ideas for what might be a visual hook. So if your song has some very distinct imagery in it, that might provide some ideas or clues of what could be intriguing and make a bigger story than just something interesting happening on the screen.
Yeah, and I think there's some subtle things you can do to, you know, as you plan to repeat the hook, the visual hook throughout the video, there are some subtle ways you can keep it feeling dynamic. So in our video, my idea was to just do this sort of incessant thing of rising out of the water again and again and again. And I thought, well, that'll be interesting and won't get boring. But then Craig, who ended up directing the thing as we were kind of brainstorming and storyboarding it as much as we could, was like, you know, I think that will get boring. So what about, you know, the song is called Anonymous. So for me, it was about doing this thing alone. And he said, but you're actually, even in the song, you're saying you want to be anonymous, so you're not. So what about at the end, there are these kind of strange voyeurs who are watching. And so the introduction of them, you know, is another way of kind of just keeping the video changing enough that it felt like it was, you know, it's not like some great story from A to Z, but at least maybe moved you from A to C or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of a visual hook, Ingrid Michaelson's latest video.
Oh yeah.
You can't go cheaper. And
no, you can't go cheaper. And I shared that on our blog.
Yeah. She just used Snapchat and the filters in Snapchat to make a goofy video. And, again, that one probably cost nothing to shoot, but it cost a lot of time. And so if you don't have money, but you have time, there's always ideas like that. It could be something that simple.
Yeah. And I have a couple friends, Rob and Naomi, who play in a band called Moody Little Sister, that shot their own stop motion animation cartoon sort of thing that they made out of construction paper, cutting and moving construction paper, where they'd fastened little pins to make joints on people's bodies. And it looked really, really good. And I thought, like, holy crap, as soon as I saw it, I thought someone else did it, because it was I didn't think they could do it. I didn't think they had the time. So I wrote her and I was like, how much did you spend on that? Like, and I think, I forget exactly what she said, but it was like 20 minutes for every 1 second of what ended up in the, so they spent like 2 weeks nonstop making this thing. So yeah, if you have that kind of time.
I have a sort of a, not a, what went wrong story, but for those that have been listening to the podcast for a long time know that I was in a band here in Portland called Hello Morning, and the other guitar player's brother-in-law works at Leica Studios, which did the movies Coraline, The Box Trolls, and a couple others, and he's one of their lead animators, and it's all stop motion. And so we were kicking around an idea for some stop motion, and I think this is where we went wrong, is that the visual hook just didn't work. The idea was supposed to be all these cards, like he did a bunch of photos of us and then had these cards printed. And the idea was that these cards were going to be falling into the screen, making the animation, and it would be all stop motion. But the idea, you know, that the pictures would be moving based on the new card falling in. And in my mind, it looked a certain way. And I think even in his mind, it looked a certain way. But what ended up happening was totally different. And it was still cool. We got this free video. It didn't have that visual completeness if we had really spent a little bit more time on it. But the challenge was we were relying on him to provide all these points that we're talking about here, as opposed to us, because, you know, he was doing the animation. So it was kind of a pet project for him to do something different other than what he does at work, where, you know, he will spend 6 months animating, you know, 5 minutes of a movie.
Right.
So anyway, it felt like when it came together that it was this great idea, but didn't quite connect the way we had hoped.
Well, that is an excellent segue to our next point. Number 5, keep the pressure on yourself. It sounds like in your case, you were relying on him to kind of bring this thing to its completion point and to kind of provide the magic. And what I thought when I made my video is, like, if I get extras involved, or even if I get Craig to help me shoot the thing and edit it, I really can't, you know, what I said is don't bet the farm on your volunteers. Like, you only have a certain amount of hours and goodwill that you can use up of other people's time. So anything that is going to be time consuming or asks a lot of you physically or in preparation, you need to be prepared to do yourself. So for me, that meant, you know, hours and hours and hours of reversing my song, trying to take dictation of the nonsense that I was hearing and figuring out, memorizing that backwards and then flipping video of me singing it backwards to sync up with the song to see how accurately my lips were moving. You know, it was many, many hours of really kind of tedious work. So if there's anything like that in your video, you need to do it yourself. You know, like that famous OK Go video with the guys on the treadmill. I don't even know if there's someone behind that camera. It might just be a steady shot the whole time. And that meant that was entirely up to them to deliver that choreographed performance. So yeah, anything with stunts, acting, plan to do it yourself and be the star, because other people might let you down. They might not, but it's a lot to gamble.
Well, and I've said this many times about artists and their own music, that no one's going to care more about your music than you, the artist, the creator, the person making the music. And furthermore, no one is going to care more about your music video and promoting your music than you. And so therefore, you can't expect people to have a high level investment. So yeah, if you're asking people like, hey, go learn this thing and do this, chances are they're going to show up unprepared, or not prepared to the level that you want, or just think, oh, I thought we could just do this when we, you know, improv or whatever, or just we'll just wing it. That
right.
Never works.
Which is a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, I think too, for me, having, this is kind of leading into my next point a little bit, which is about preparation, but having done all that work myself and knowing that I needed to kind of carry the burden of the whole video, when I showed up and we were at the pool and we did a practice run of me singing it in reverse and Craig is there shooting it, he was like, at the end of that, he was like, holy crap. Like, how I pleasantly surprised him, because I think he was thinking I would just know a few lines here and there and that would have to be enough. And so then anyways, when he gives you that, you know, gave me that feedback of like, wow, good job, then suddenly I have this confidence of like, all right, this is going to work, and this whole shoot will be great. And so I had a blast for the next 4 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as opposed to if you had asked somebody else to do that and they show up and you're like, all right, let's just cancel this now because this is going to be a disaster. All right. Number six.
Yeah, number six, we've kind of already been talking about, but prepare. You've got to practice. So like I said, any choreography or any lip syncing or, you know, make sure you've got it down beforehand. If you're using props or, you know, anything special about the location that needs to be prepared, make sure it's all taken care of in advance. You know, if you show up on the day of the shoot and people aren't ready or something about the location, you know, if you have to wait around an extra 3 hours for something, like your whole concept could be spoiled. So, so prepare. And when everyone is prepared, like I was saying, you can really just focus your energy, on delivering something and having fun and you know, I think bring out the best of, what everyone is contributing to the project.
I think a lot of times when people are trying to wrangle a group of people together to do something, where they usually fall flat on preparation is understanding what it's like to wrangle 5-6 people around together. Someone gets hungry, someone's got to use the bathroom, someone's bored, someone's got, you know, it's just a really weird thing. And so it's like understanding that that element is going to be a part of it and showing up and understanding that, hey, you know, we need to plan for these things. People are going to have to use the bathroom. People are going to want food. People are going to, you know, get distracted and just, you know, maybe even telling people, hey, I'm asking, please leave your cell phones in your car, or we'll take breaks where you can check. But the more focused attention we have, the quicker we can move along and you know, just even understanding the dynamics of when you actually show up and there's people around that, that it's sometimes it's a pain in the butt to have people, you know, helping you.
Yeah. I mean, I had a couple bonus tips. One of them was to discuss everyone's specific involvement beforehand. And I think that's part of it. Like if I were to get an email from a friend saying, hey, can you help out in this music video? You're probably going to be sitting around for 2 or 3 hours, but then I really need you for this hour. You know, chances are I'm still going to be happy to do it. And having been kind of forewarned about what the environment might be like or what it entails, like I'll make the best of it, as opposed to, you know, kind of not knowing what you're getting into and then sitting around for 2 or 3 hours, which then feels more tedious. Like, so I think, you know, having those kind of frank discussions with people beforehand and finding out what everyone's responsibility is, what you expect of them. I think it's still okay. If you're asking for someone's help, you can still say, you know, it'll be for 3 or 4 hours and here's what I expect. You know, don't phrase it like that.
But yeah. Here's what I need from you.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I think what you're saying is like having a sheet ahead of time saying, here's the people, you know, like a shoot, a day sheet, like here's what we're shooting, here's the time frames, and here's where people are going to be slotted in, and just so they can mentally prepare, because you don't want to show up when you're like ready to start rolling and everyone's like, why am I here? What are we doing? You're like, oh gosh. There's people that it doesn't matter how much you tell them ahead of time, they're still going to show up doing that.
Yeah. So. And like you said, people are hungry. I mean, that was another thing. I had some snacks there too, just in case, like we didn't have to take a giant break in the middle of something, you know, it could just take a minute to have a Cliff Bar or whatever. But,
This isn't listed on your under Be Prepared, but I think it goes in line, and you kind of mentioned it already, and I, before you even mentioned it, wrote a note to ask you. So you storyboarded it out.
Yeah, very, very roughly. We did have, you know, three acts, one, you know, a costume change for each of them, a light change that corresponded with it, and then... in the second one, there was going to be the introduction of a prop. And the third one is going to be the sort of introduction of these Watcher characters. And I think we had also planned to speed up the pace of the cuts between what do you call it in the video world? Clips? Shots?
Shots? Scenes?
Yeah, just the editing would become more fast-paced at that point. So, you know, that was sort of our rough outline.
For anyone listening who's not familiar with what storyboarding is, it's sort of a general picture of what the frame or that scene might look like, more like the particular shot. Like if you've seen special features on some big budget movies, one that comes to mind is the special features of Lord of the Rings. They show a lot of the storyboards. So it's like, and this is kind of imitating what the camera shot might be. And it's just a line drawing, looks kind of like a comic book. And it just helps them prepare the shot so they're not standing out there with 100 people on payroll figuring out where the camera is going to go and what the actor should be doing. It kind of maps out the whole thing. We actually did this for a promo video we're getting ready to shoot for CD Baby. We're shooting next week. Our videographer, Tony, created a storyboard that really helped us visualize and talk through the idea. So even if you're not a great drawer and don't have skills in that area like myself, it still could be helpful to get the visuals in your mind, especially with how the camera might be positioned and where you might be positioned in the camera. It can be really helpful.
I think another thing with that storyboard that we did with Tony for CD Baby, certain, you know, ideas for the script or revisions of the ideas for the script kind of came about through that discussion by having something to visualize.
Yeah.
And not that you'll necessarily have a script in a music video, but when we tried to draw it out, we realized what elements were missing when we were kind of conceptualizing it based on this visual reference. So, yeah, I think it's helpful, even if it's very kind of rudimentary.
Well, the best way I think I could explain it is it takes ideas and makes them into concrete items, a part of the video. And then you can talk about those concrete items as opposed to staying in idea land and showing up at a video shoot with a bunch of ideas where you have these ideas floating around here. Hey, we should do this, this, and this. And they can seem very planned out. But then when you put it in a storyboard, it helps you go, well, in context of a video, yeah, like you said, we're missing this whole piece right here. It doesn't make sense to go from this shot to that shot. And depending on what you're doing, it has more or less importance. But I think it's a good thing to try, even if you just want to draw one scene of the general look that you want the video to have.
Yeah, and you know, it made me think of another thing I didn't put in this collection of tips, but we did not storyboard or script out the action to the extent where I knew specifically when I would be falling into the pool. So what happened was when we were there shooting, I knew, you know, to make up for the fact that we hadn't scripted out exactly the moments, either according to lyric or according to, you know, the minutes of play in the song, when I was going to fall, I had to get coverage. So I had to do it way, way, way more than would actually be shown in the final video, just to make sure, you know, Craig, when he was editing, had enough of this action. And we could have been more detailed about it and said, you know, after such and such lyric fall, and make sure that there's just a fall, enough fall spread out over the course of this 3.5 minute song. But I don't know if I got lazy towards the end. I just figured it'd be more fun to just wing it in the moment a number of times. So
I think that would be a bonus tip I would add, is that shoot way more than you think you'll need. Nothing's worse than getting to editing and finding out that there was something screwed up in the background of that shot, or that you had your face funny, or, man, I wish I had it from this angle. Just get a lot of extra stuff. Sometimes in the movie world, they call it B-roll. It may be just extra little things happening because you feel like, hey, we got 3 camera angles of us playing this song, and 30 seconds into the song, you've already used those 3 camera angles and you're kind of bored of it. Well, get some close-ups of the instruments. Get some background space shots. Get a whole bunch of extra stuff that doesn't even necessarily require you to be performing or doing whatever you want to do in the video, but just have a bunch of extra footage to help build out the story.
Yeah, because you don't want to have to go back for it.
No,
that's,
you don't.
A pain in the ass. I just had 2 other quick bonus tips, if we have time for them.
We have time. Then we've got some comments and emails and a phone call.
Okay. So my next tip, which is the one that would bring it out of the no budget into the low budget music video realm, but is be ready to edit the video yourself, which might mean you need to get iMovie or Final Cut Pro or something like that to do the editing. But when I asked Craig to be involved, he was in a super, super busy season for him for work. And, you know, he said, I'm happy to shoot it, not sure if I can edit it or not. So I was ready to edit if I needed to. And I don't know if his schedule cleared up or if he had enough fun making the thing that he wanted to just finish it, but he ended up editing it. But I was prepared otherwise. And then the other thing I was going to say is promote it. Once it's all done, try and get a premiere like we talked about a few episodes ago. You know, share it on social and your newsletter, and try and capture some extra footage for behind the scenes videos or behind the scenes, you know, still photos you can share on social, and let everyone know.
Yeah, that's a great tip that a lot of people in the moment, sometimes it's easy to forget and go, oh, never mind, I don't want to mess with that. But if you can, while you're still there on this location, spend 5 minutes talking about what you're doing, or throughout the process, talk about what you're doing to the camera, because that stuff can be amazing extra, like behind the scenes footage. Even if you think you're not doing something that innovative, your fans will enjoy an insight into what you're doing, the process. For just like we say a lot of times about music, making creative stuff like a video or an album is completely unknown to a lot of people, and the average music fan has no idea how a music video gets made. And so the artist that they like talking about the process of this video they saw is cool. It's good bonus material, and it's something to help promote the video with.
Yeah, and another thing I thought, which I have actually never done, but you can also do a live premiere event, like in either before you play a concert, you could premiere the video on a screen, or just in lieu of a concert, you could kind of host a, like, I don't know, a dinner or something at a bar at a happy hour, and kind of show your video and make an event out of it that way too. So it's another way to get press and attention.
Yep. Well, cool. Thanks for all those tips. I think they're great. You know, if I think the last thing I would say on that is there's, you know, because you mentioned that you have a friend who happens to be a filmmaker. So someone could be listening going, well, I don't have a friend who's a filmmaker, so I'm screwed. So, but that's not the case. You can do some things. There's some things you could do where you just put a camera on a tripod and do it yourself. There's also, you know, one thing that if you have a college in your area, especially an art school, so many colleges have film departments or art departments where they might have film class, and students are always looking for interesting projects. And if you come to them with an idea, a lot of times that can be a gold mine for you to get great material. You might have to work with them a little bit, but at the same time, that's always an option to get free video work. It's like, you know, you're a student, you want to do something cool, someone brings you an idea, chances are they'll go for it. So that's always a good place to look. And, you know, just ask out on social networks. You might find that someone that follows you, a friend that you've been connected with, but that's not the nature of your connection, might actually have some skills in that area, and you never know. So there's lots of options to help, to get out there and look for help that has some expertise that could still do it for free or very low budget.
Yeah, and really cool videos can look very crappy. Like, as long as the idea is interesting enough, like again, that OK Go video with them on the treadmills, it looks terrible, but it's just so awesome that they're pulling off this ridiculous dance. So I think don't be hard on yourself if you can't get some super, you know, high budget feel to what you're shooting.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, we have lots of comments and emails to get to. By the way, we will put a link to Chris's video that he's been talking about in the show notes of this episode, so you can check it out.
Oh, you should put the behind-the-scenes one on.
I will put the behind-the-scenes one, too, because, awesome. Yes. Well, we have lots of comments and emails to get to, so let's get to it. Well, Chris, the last episode we had the interview with Tom Jackson. We talked about the four pillars of a successful performance. And as I predicted, there's always people that love the idea, think it's amazing, and other people that for some reason the idea of putting thought into the performance is a bit off-putting, or I don't know. It's just an interesting reaction that we get from artists. But anyway, got some feedback on that. Here's the first email. Hi, Kevin. I listened to the Stagecraft podcast and, of course, found it very informative. That very evening, I went to see Paul McCartney, who did all the things that Mr. Jackson described in the interview. No doubt Sir Paul is, in Mr. Jackson's parlance, married to his audience, but that doesn't exclude him from doing all the things necessary to put on a great show for 3 hours straight at the age of 73, I might add. That evening, he was playing the same arena. The next evening, he was playing the same arena again, and I managed to catch a bit of the encore on Periscope. And every bit of it was the same. All the stage banter, the jokes, etc. All the stuff that seemed off the cuff and spontaneous was all there, aside from a few minor deviations. So clearly, even the most recognizable musician on the planet and perhaps the greatest living songwriter, in my opinion, needs to be highly prepared. Still, it never seemed like it was anything but spontaneous and real. What a great show. Thanks for the great podcast. Cheers, Jim Pellinger. Thanks, Jim. Yes, so even the greats, that's partly why they're the greats. And this next comment comes from Tom from the podcast site. He left it in the show notes for the Tom Jackson episode. And I'm just reading it as he left it. So, but if you only do bands, now the most boring music on the planet, I've already tuned out. Look, it is not the 60s. What was fresh then is not fresh now. To all bands, you've had 50 years to try and imitate the Beatles, and you're not as good. Honest, none of you. Yes, really. Give it up. Do something different. Move forward or move out of the way of those who are changing music. Take the man's advice and give a good show, but don't start with generic 60-year-old your grandfather's band formula. You can't be breaking new ground when you are just shoveling dirt. Some of us think rock has jumped the shark and is due for a major change where musicians have stopped trying to fill a 60-year-old formula. So that comment was from Tom. I
thought rock jumped the shark in the 70s. Isn't that what punk was about?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what Tom was talking about, except that it sounded like he was commenting on it being formulaic. But
I bet, you know, I don't know if he's talking about genre changes or changes in performance styles or whatever, but even if you took like an EDM artist or even a DJ that's, you know, just standing behind his tables at a party, there's things that DJ is doing that I bet directly relate to Tom Jackson's advice.
Yeah, for this first song, I'm going to wave my right arm. Then the second song, I'm going to wave my left arm.
And then the next one, I'll wave both of them.
That's right.
But no, seriously, though, yeah. The way they're holding their headphones changes. Like, I don't know how much of it is scripted, but who knows? Like, every genre has its visual, you know, whatever, tropes or something. And it's just about using them to connect with the audience. So,
yeah, and Tom does work with other people besides bands. I know in the course of the conversation, a lot of times it's easier to talk about bands, or actually it's easy to talk about groups with more than one person, because he actually works with a lot of like vocal groups and stuff. You know, there's groups out there now like Pentatonix and stuff that are more a cappella oriented, that those things apply. But it's like it's easier to talk about a situation where there's multiple people for the sake of a podcast to do a very obvious demonstration. But he does work with solo artists, and sometimes it's a matter of like when a song, I've seen him work with a solo artist before, they'll be sitting on a stool and there's the point in the song where it gets real emotional, and just them standing up and like kicking the stool back, not like throwing it across the stage, but just like pushing it back and standing up and really, you know, like lifting the mic up and digging in, it's like that is a very obvious visual emotional lift that happens and works for solo artists. And he works with solo artists and doing a whole bunch of things that seem more subtle, but make every song feel and look a little different. So it's not just dude sitting on a stool playing acoustic guitar for 2 hours. There are options, and Tom has a lot of resources about that, so you can check it out. But you know, I thought I'd include Tom from the blog, not Tom from the interview. to just, you know, that there are other opinions out there about it.
I have one comment about that too. I was thinking, like, yes, genres change, yes, production techniques change, you know, the way we use different music theory tricks or whatever, like music changes. But in the end, like, we're the same damn species as we were 50 years ago. We're the same species as we were 400 years ago. So as humans, there are archetypal things, or I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, something that is communicative and conveys an emotion to another person. How drastically is that going to change? Like, I don't care what we're listening to. Like,
exactly.
And Tom's not being prescriptive about what you should do. He's just saying be open to certain concepts that will help you find your way of communicating with your audience. But it's still, you know, nothing's new under the sun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the key things that was interesting, if you were at the DIY Musician Conference last year and saw Tom do the live band makeover, is the band had lots of energy and seemingly the audience was thinking, oh, these guys know what they're doing, because they were kind of running around the stage, slightly spastic, but especially the lead singer. And Tom asked him to go, I want you to, this part of the song, go to the right side of the stage, and then I want you to come to the left side of the stage. And he basically, the lead singer, kind of ran over there and then ran back. And he's like, you just ran over there and you just, instead of saying, hi, it's nice to meet you, just took off. It's like, no, you can look at these people and you can pay attention to them, and like even just looking at them and acknowledging that they're in the audience, that's some of those human cues that have been the same since humans existed. If I'm looking at you and singing, maybe I'm involving you in the conversation. So those kind of cues and things are very important, that I think a lot of artists, if they actually videoed themselves and watched it, they're kind of looking down, they're not moving as much as they think. You know, trust me. When we worked with him with Small Town Poets, our merch sales went through the roof, and we were the opening act on a national tour that played close to 90 cities, and we had a 25-minute set, and by the end of the tour, a lot of the people were coming to see us as opposed to the headliner. So it was a very weird situation where you feel like that it was on when our record was breaking. And so some good things were happening, but that set really helped us sell that we were the real deal, that Tom helped us put together. It was a fantastic thing to be a part of and feel like you transformed as a performer. And I got another comment here from Mark. He said, thank you very much. This is awesome. I've listened to this about 3 times already and picking up more of the details of the points each time. So cool. Yeah. And I should mention that if you want to email us or call our listener line, you can at 360. Where's that number? I should have it memorized by now. No one memorizes numbers anymore. It's 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. Got a couple more emails and a phone call. We're going to move through them quickly. This is from Ryan States. Hi, guys. I have some questions. Maybe you can address in the cast. I'm looking at communities like Music X-Ray and Taxi. Which ones are worth considering? Any updates? Is it worth doing, or should songwriters just deal directly with music libraries only? Personally, I'm only looking for song placements and song licensing. I joined Music X-Ray 2 weeks ago. I've had a few songs put on hold and a couple of passes. I've accumulated a few dozen fans. They provided the emails. Should I reach out to them? What quality of fans can I expect? Where do they come from? Are they real people? And as far as the industry professionals go, what kind of cross-section can I expect? A lot of the listings seem to be from the same people or same labels. What do you think of X-Ray's selection prediction? This is based on 20 submissions, which can run you hundreds of dollars per song. Are people seeing success? As usual, thanks for your insights. You know, with both Taxi and Music X-Ray, I would say that you should definitely understand what you're getting into and understand what's going to be required of you. I've spoken at the Taxi Music Conference a few times, and while I'm there, I've met many artists who have had some big placements using the Taxi service. It can be very helpful. You know, I think with all of these services, it's one, you got to do a first quick self-assessment and understand what is being used in sync licensing. And if that's not your music, it doesn't matter how great it is, doesn't matter who produces it, If your music doesn't fit their usage, it's not going to get placed. So you kind of have to do some self-assessment and go, do I really have the kind of things that they're looking for? If yes, then I think it's a matter of, well, maybe it's worth a shot. And you know, that you're taking a risk. There's no guarantees that you will get placements. You know, I've heard artists that have been dissatisfied with Taxi. I've heard artists that love it. I haven't talked to many people that have used Music X-Ray, but I know the CEO, and he's a good guy, and I think the service he's trying to provide is legit and real. And again, it's one of those things that you got to have the right music in order to get placed. And so if anyone out there has used them and has an opinion, I'd love for you to weigh in, help Ryan out, leave a comment on the show notes. But yeah, I'd love to hear your experience on using those companies, because I honestly haven't, outside of the Taxi conference, haven't talked to a lot of people and gotten their feedback on them. We got one last email, then we got a voicemail, and we'll call it a day. Hey, Kevin and friends, I hope everyone is doing well. I have a question about artist names. My apologies if a question like this has been answered before. Ever since I started writing music, I've gone with the handle Hatch. It was my late grandfather's nickname, and he was a big proponent of me being more serious with my music. Unfortunately, I've come to realize that it doesn't search well on Google, and a ton of artists and companies have the same or similar names. It's so bad that when you click on my artist profile on Spotify, you end up seeing a few other albums from different artists. Obviously, the name holds sentimental value for me. In addition, I have released my first album under this name. The music has been digitally distributed by CD Baby. All my social media uses this name. Sony Music Korea distributed my album in Korea under this name, and my URL has the name in it. I've had a lot of people tell me that they just can't find my stuff when they try to find it online. What do you guys recommend in a situation like this? Is it worth it to try and change it all? Should I just keep plugging away with the same name, hope to build it bigger so that it can't be missed on the internet? Your advice is greatly appreciated. All the best, Chad. I told Chad we'd answer this on the podcast.
That's a tough one. My initial thought, although I'm not certain that I feel this way, but I was thinking just change your name, because if people know specifically what they're looking for and they're still having a hard time finding it, that's bad news. But maybe it is also possible that the more he plugs away, the more he'll kind of crowd out the competition.
Yeah, I thought about that, and that is possible. But you would have to be with a single word name like Hatch, you would have to become like superstar status for it to come up in the top result of Google, because there's going to be, and even at that point, it might still, you're probably still fighting the definition of like a hatch, like on a, you know, like a door.
Like on Lost.
Yeah, like on Lost. Like, yes, exactly. So you're always going to be fighting that. So that's the challenge when naming an artist name. The other thing, if there's other artists using it, that could be a challenge. I think I told him that when I responded to him that using like hatchmusic.com, if that's available, that probably isn't available. Or official hatchmusic.com. That I've seen a lot of artists, even major label artists, start using official because they have, you know, specific URLs that they couldn't get. But I would ultimately probably recommend that it's always going to be something you're fighting, and that you might want to change it to something else. Even if you have previous releases, that's okay. It's better to deal with it now and then to keep having that same frustration over and over again. Now, concerning the issue that you're seeing in Spotify where other artists are attached, this will happen if you do have names that are identical. You know, if your name's John Smith, there's probably a bunch of other artists named John Smith that when the music gets distributed, that they sometimes, the streaming services will lump them together thinking they're the same artist. That can be straightened out. Just email us at CD Baby and we will put in the request to get that separated for you. So yeah, my recommendation would be that it's probably time to change the name.
Yeah, and if there's, you know, like you said, sentimental reasons to kind of pay tribute to, was it grandfather, right?
Yep.
Like maybe that becomes the name of an album or a song instead of your artist name. So
I think that's what I mentioned to him, that, you know, sometimes people sort of adopt they release a solo album, a debut album, they kind of use their artist name, and then they sort of morph that artist name into the sort of the album title of that release. Right. I've seen that happen before. All right, we've got one call, and let's get to it now.
Hey, guys. It's Zach from Bipolar Beats, and I just wanted to weigh in a little bit and let you guys know something I came up with for the album versus single topic. And really what I thought about it after hearing everything is I feel like both the album and singles have things that they do better than the other one. And really, I feel like it just boils down to your strategy and your goals. If you've already got stuff out there and you're trying to keep stuff fresh for fans, you want to just keep stuff updated, then it makes sense to release, you know, a single every month. It's something new and it's something fresh. On the flip side of that, you know, if you're a new artist and you have nothing out, well, it might make a little bit more sense to do an album. You know, another thing about the album is, to me, when I think of an album is a concept. It's not necessarily a concept album, but it just, it has a purpose. You know, oftentimes there's like a theme of the whole thing. And what I've been struggling with is I produce music and, you know, I make beats and I engineer. And I've been struggling because I have a song that I really love and that I wrote, but it's the only song that I have. And, you know, so I'm like, well, do I want to wait to finish an album, which could be potentially years, or do I want to just release it? And what I decided is it connects with me and it connects with people. I'm going to record it. I'm going to make a music video and I'm just going to release it as a single. From there, my plan is to make it available for free or donation on my website, one of those, you know, options. And then the other part of it is I'm also going to give away the beat for free. You know, I'm going to allow people to download the instrumental and make their own songs out of it. You know, and I just feel like maybe it'd be a good way to draw traffic to my site. So yeah, that was just one thing and one idea that I came up with. Thanks guys. Bye.
Well, thanks for the call, Zach. I liked his idea that, you know, he's got a song that's been, he's got that he thinks connects with people, but it might be a while before he has an actual album. So putting it out, making a video, making the beat available to folks to make other songs from, especially since, you know, that's what he does a lot of, making of beats and stuff like that. And I would agree with him that the album and single can serve very different strategic purposes.
Yeah, just this morning, I think this is kind of 6 month old news, but was just reading about Matt the Electrician. Do you know him?
I've heard of him.
He's a singer-songwriter from Austin. And I guess about 6 months ago, he started doing, instead of putting out albums, which he's done for years and years, he has this project where he'll go and do two songs. And each of those little two songs that he does, he makes with another, collaborates with a different Austin band. And then he puts it out as a 7-inch, with digital distribution as well. So it's not like it just lives on this little record. But I thought that was a cool way too, where every release, even though it's not as large or it's not an album, but there is something kind of project oriented about each different release since it's with a different collaborator, and then he puts them out every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. It just depends on what you accomplish and strategy. And I think that's the important thing with all of the album versus single debate. It's just a matter of understanding why you're doing something, or if you're just doing it because someone said, hey, don't release albums anymore, just release singles, or you're doing it because you're like, this is how I'm using the release of singles to better my career, as opposed to releasing more music at once. So. Cool. Well, you are welcome to email us with your thoughts on any of the episodes, or just want to tell us a cool story, success story, a mistake story, whatever. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. You can call us at 360-524-2209, or you can leave a comment in the comment section for each show at cdbabypodcast.com. And any other final thoughts closing us out, Chris?
Well, just that if you have shot a no budget music video that you're really proud of, I would love to see it. So maybe can leave links in the episode comments.
Excellent, excellent idea. Yes, please, if you've done some cool music videos, post a link. And don't just post a link, tell us about it. And let us learn from what you did. And tell us what some things you learned, some things you tried, what worked, what didn't work. Did it turn out like you had hoped? Yeah, just tell us about it. I think that would be very useful.
And maybe with the budget too, because it's conceivable that you could still do it. You know, maybe you spent $15 on a crazy new hat or something. So tell us what you spent on it.
Yeah, I think that's the important part. Don't post this fancy Hollywood slick video and not tell us that it really cost you $10,000 to get made. We want to know the cost. So it's okay if you spent that much, but we just want to know. I think it's good for people to see, oh, this person did this for $100, that person did it for $5, this person did it for $15, you know, or that person did it for $10,000. It's kind of interesting to see and let everyone in the community ask questions back and forth. I think that would be very helpful. So cool. Thanks for adding that in.
Yeah. Oh, and if you check out my video,
I'll put a link to the video we did.
Let's see. Give your thumbs up, subscribe to our channels, leave comments, do all those, you know, socially sort of things.
The socially acceptable things. All right. Excellent. That's going to do it. And we'll be back with more podcasts soon. Take it easy.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.